Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition proudly welcomes you to The Mix-Up, an iBites production. I'm your host, Chef Patrick Garmong, mixing it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community.
Welcome to The Mix-Up. I'm Chef Patrick Garmong back on in the studio with you all today. I want to give a special thanks to Chef Garrett Verdan for covering for me last month. And I am so excited to be back and sharing some great culinary wisdom with all of you. I want to introduce you all and welcome Chef Devinder Kumar. Chef, welcome. And please tell us a little bit about where you're at and what you're doing.
Thank you so much, Chef. And it's such a great honor to represent wonderful College Prep Academy on this national platform. So first of all, thank you so much for giving us an opportunity. So as you say, my name is Devinder Kumar. And one thing as an immigrant means biggest thing that as an immigrant family, you either want to be a doctor or you want to be a lawyer, or you want to be a engineer. And this is exactly my education was. And I went to a pharmacy school and as an immigrant child, I wanted to come here and then go for my education and become a pharmacist. Start working in a restaurant and fell in love with food. So as most of my punchline, as it says, that I hung my lab coat in exchange for a chef coat. So 22 years later, it's just a beginning, and it has been a very humbling journey and a lot of learning, a lot of challenges, especially coming from outside from my industry. There was a lot of hard work involved. Means I end up opening up multiple restaurants in San Jose, California area. And then in 2010, when recession was at just boom, and I lost all my three restaurants and I was able to get a job at Stanford University.
Okay.
A great platform to be in, and I'm so thankful to them for that opportunity. And almost a decade with them, learned a lot of processes, learned a global food, means we represented it at 130 plus countries. Students, that means we wanted to make sure that we provided a home away from a home experience for almost 130 countries.
Wow. Right?
And global cuisine and providing a wide array of food. And then in 2019, I left Stanford University and start working for a consulting company, and I traveled between East Coast to West Coast for the higher ed. Major domain with the university dining platform. And then everybody knows what happened when COVID hit, right?
And so right.
2020, what a humbling year that has been, and now almost a 16 months now. And in that whole thing, I had an opportunity to work for such an amazing school, wonderful College Prep Academy, and we are located in Delano and Lost Hill, California. It's the Central Valley. If you're familiar with it, Central Valley is a salad bowl of almost a nation. And for us, for me especially, Silicon Valley to a salad bowl, that transition was absolutely humbling. And the one of the greatest thing that worked in my favor to make that transition was the core values that wonderful College Prep Academy stands for. It means I, as a chef, I, as a pharmacist, I stand for health and wellness, and everything needs to be intentional, not accidental. Whatever we do, regardless of which food, which cuisine, which ingredients we use, it needs to be intentional. And that resonates exactly with the wonderful College Prep Academy, our health and wellness centric. Any of the decisions helped me navigate through the last 15 months, and rest of the history. I mean, we will keep talking about this one, but wonderful College Prep Academy in Central Valley, Delano, and Lost Hill.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. Yeah, intentional, not accidental. That, I think that might be my key takeaway for 2021 so far. That's a great turn of phrase. So in terms of your wonderful College Prep Academy, what's your enrollment there? How many students are you serving on a regular basis?
Sure. So between both campuses, we are about 2,500 plus minus, and we are expanding our high school in the Lock Hill campus, also in the Delano campus. So our enrollment is going to go up by 10 to 12% coming school year. And if just to give a little bit more background about Kern County as in general or the Center Valley, most of our population is Hispanic or Spanish speaking. 90%+ of our population is that. But that means 90%+ of our people within the community either are directly working in the farms or indirectly supporting that industry, right? So all the either support or you're directly working in that thing. Now that thing comes with a lot of challenges.
Yeah.
That working in a farm, sometimes it could be a seasonal, sometimes it doesn't pay enough to stay on track with the wages and stuff. So that means our population, 20%+ of our Kern County population, has a food insecurity. And wow. Then
I mean, it's just, I'm sorry to cut you off. I mean, it just, you know, you said you're right there in the salad bowl of the nation, right? And yet food insecurity, 1 in 5 people are struggling to figure out where their next meal is coming from. It's that's crazy.
And this boggles me as well. And what you just said, you use the right word, crazy, and it is crazy. And this may very well have a multiple reasons. It means either it's a socioeconomic reason or parents managing their multiple jobs. One of the biggest sentence I use all the time is that my reason to come to Center Valley was to bridge a gap between what California grows versus what California serve in its schools.
Right.
And that doesn't stop at just serving what we are growing, but also the education and the intention behind it, right? What we are serving, how we are serving, what are the cuisines, even though majority of our students are Spanish speaking or from a Hispanic background or Hispanic ethnicity, my intention as a chef is to introduce them to a food all over the globe. Means when I was working at Stanford University, we would have a freshman come in and we would have a spread from all over the globe in a dining hall, means almost 80 to 100 items on a daily basis. We would have between cold and a hot thing. And kids are looking for hot dogs and hamburgers and pizzas. And that's absolutely counterproductive of what we were doing. So a lot of education. And for me to actually bridge that gap now is a lot more easy than teaching them when they're actually already there. You know what I mean? When our kids, our scholars are going to go to big universities or universities, and then they're going to go to a dining experience. So we want to give them a introduction to what does that look like in a university setting? What does it look like to be even inclusive and to just learn somebody's culture? And biggest and easiest way to learn somebody's culture is through the food, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's amazing. I mean, one of my biggest focuses when I was a director in child nutrition program was trying to capture those younger students and create lifelong healthy relationships with food at that level and try to gravitate them away from the pizza, hamburger, hot dog. I mean, there's a time and place for those things, don't get me wrong, but to expand their palates and let them know that there's more opportunity out there. There's different flavors, there's different textures out there that are just so amazing. And I think you're absolutely right. One of the best ways to start learning about different culture is through your nose, your eyes, and your mouth, right? Like taking those foods in and learning so much about different cultures through that eating experience. So to step back just a little bit, I mean, you started with your the school that you're working with kind of in the middle of COVID, it sounds like. What did feeding students in that time frame look like? Were you doing meals on campus? Were you doing grab and go curbside? How were you helping to bridge that food insecurity gap in, you know, the most challenging time that many of us have ever faced and hopefully will ever face?
Great question, Chef. And I think that let me step back for 1 second. So in the past, if we talk about it, we went through a great recession, then we went through a great depression. I call this phase that we went through as a great adaptation.
Yeah, there
we
you
went
go.
Through, you know, we went through great. Every single day brought a new challenge. Means starting from March, April, May last year, nobody knew what to do. And there were so many moving pieces, so many variables, so many things changing, and nobody understood the magnitude behind it. And I was hired last May as soon as I came in, and it was right in the middle of the just a fire, right? Means we are at that point, we were serving both Central Valley community and our scholars. And right in there, our intention was to make sure we are pumping food every single day, breakfast and lunch, as it was a seamless summer option. And all our students, we had access to food, both meals a day, and also open for the community. We did do daily pickups from our both campuses. Also, then there is another challenge of Kern County, as a lot of other places as well, that the parents working both jobs.
Right.
They leave super early in the morning. Means if you're familiar with agriculture jobs, they start their day early and it ends early. And that exactly is the school time, right?
Yeah.
And then they're not even home to come pick up the meals. So we wanted to make sure that the access to food is as accessible as the access to education is, right? So we actually start delivering more than two campuses curbside. We added early March Wasco and McFarland as our stop, so that community where we have addresses of a student that live there, we added three of those stops. And also a lot of community within our Loft Hill campus, we have a student group that lives in the mobile home park. 50, 60, 70 families in there that have no access to a food on a three meals a day basis. And also they're working from multiple jobs. And students and the kids are at home, either with a grandparent or with an older sibling, but no food access. So we made sure to provide a food to them at their doorstep. So we would send a food there every single day and just make food accessible. So adaptation was the way to go. We kept going and going. And then we realized in the middle of the whole thing that bringing the parents back to campus every single day to pick up a meal wasn't the best way. So we added a bulk meal option. And in order for us to capture a bulk meal option, and this is a very fun story, that we put it on our parent square, which is our central notification system or in our email system. It went through and then nothing moved our needle at all. It was whatever numbers we were doing, it didn't do much. But then we reached out to a lot of our partners within the community or within our school community rather. And then we start making phone calls to every single parent.
Yeah.
The same script that we are here, we can provide you a meal. Either it's 5 days a week, we added a bulk meal option. You can do either two times a week, or you can do a one time a week, all 10 meals in one pickup. And that was one of the most successful thing we did during this whole thing. Our participation went from a 30%, it jumped to a 70%+.
Wow.
Yes, and 10 meals. And do remember, and I'm not sure if I mentioned so far, all our meals are scratch cooked.
Wow. You all were doing completely scratch-based meals in bulk meal kits, 10 meals at a time, through, again, one of the most challenging times in any of our lives. Wow, that's
correct.
That's crazy.
Just to add to that craziness, as you said, that our commitment, remember, our commitment is a health and a wellness and nutrition centric.
Yeah.
As a chef, it just like the moment I see just processed or ultra processed food, and in especially in a community which is a food insecure to start with,
right.
Well, that did not do a justice to my education. That did not do a justice to what I stand for. And that does not do a justice to anything that WCPA stands for either, right? I mean, we have a great partners as a Dr. Linda Resnick and a Stuart Resnick as the founder of a wonderful company. And their mission is to provide access to a food and health to every single citizen of Central Valley and beyond. And this resonates exactly with me. And for us to think different in adaptation way, this was the one of the thing on a whiteboard that now we are going in a model of providing a bulk meals, 10 meals at a time. How do we do a scratch cook and bring a balance of a HACCP with it?
Right.
So immediately what we did was, first thing was that when we were calling people, as I was saying earlier, we made sure that those parents had enough room in their refrigerator to keep the 10 meals.
Yeah. Right. I got to stop you real quick. This story is amazing. And I think one of the biggest takeaways for me so far is how much communication you all had with these families, right? It wasn't just about throwing something up on social media or sending it out in an e-blast through the school district or whatever communication method was there. It was getting on the phone and talking to people. And I think it's challenging, for huge districts to do that. But I think at the end, it really does start providing that real touch, that comfort level, that communication that folks need to be able to bridge these gaps. And as you're trying to bridge this huge food insecurity gap, you're finding ways to do it. It's the oldest and most effective way. It's like real communication between people. And I so admire what you all did to just take that extra step. And I'm sorry to cut you off. I had to note that the level of communication, it's critical, right? And we kind of always had a saying in my family growing up that, 99% of life is showing up. And that's how you all showed up. It wasn't just making food. It was reaching out and making sure that people knew that you were there and getting that message out. And, I'm so sorry to interrupt your story. Please keep going. This is so inspiring. I'm so inspired by everything you all have done.
Absolutely. And we understand the importance of communication, and not even that, but also you touched on the right thing that we wanted to make sure, create a message that we are in it together.
Yeah.
If you are going through a struggle to manage your two jobs a day and then a couple of kids in a home, or maybe more than two kids at home, whatever the case is, right? We are there with you every step of the way. We will provide you a solution. And when we were talking about the scratch cooking and have some balance, we immediately made sure that they had enough space. And then we start cooking the food and we start flash freezing everything.
Okay.
Exact same process of flash freezing. Every single meal that we sent out, it had its own individual label, reheating instructions, and then QR code, which took them to our web page for the more instructions and the more communication should they need anything like that. I mean, those were the steps, and those could not be possible without the amazing, amazing, amazing team I have. I mean, it's not even a Harvest Hall, that's the name of our dining here, but also WCPA community in general. I mean, between our academic staff to our senior leadership to our founders to our stakeholders and our leadership with Linda and Stuart Resnick Foundation. Those were the very, very critical part of our success, and they showed up. We were not the only one showed up. Like, we told our parents that we are in it together. Same thing, our stakeholders, our leadership, our board members say, you know what, you go ahead and you do yourself, and we are with you. We are in it together as well. So this was a mutual bondage, mutual partnership that benefited towards that.
Yeah, wow, that's, I guess, it's an incredible story. I'm super inspired by everything you all did. I mean, I want to make sure people understand or listen. This, you run a national school lunch program. It's not just a private school that's got a bunch of money. You all have kids with huge food insecurity. You face the same challenges as every other school that's out there trying to serve students on the National School Lunch Program. So, scalability, but it can be done. So let's fast forward. The new school year is coming up. Things are starting to shift, change. The term open up comes up a lot, but I don't think we'll ever be back to what normal was. And I think maybe that's a good thing, right? We all learn and grow and our mindsets and our experiences help shape where we move to. But bringing students back on campus, eating on campus, is that what you all are going to do? What's that going to look like? How are you going to meet your students' needs in the upcoming school year?
Great question, Chef. So between both campuses, we had a lot of success stories. So Loft Hill campus, that has our smaller campus, it does feed about 400 plus minus students and then community people and then our staff, right? So we were able to adapt to some programs where we were able to bring the students back on campus last October, November. So we went through the some of the about 80 plus percent of our students were on campus at one point, and we kept adapting. Adaptation was the key to everything. So original idea was that we provided 100% of our meals in the classroom, and every single meal 3 times a day between breakfast, lunch, and supper, we provided in a classroom setting. And then there was a lot of things that we could done, means there was a lot of way to be an ambassador for financial spending. And the best thing that worked out in our way was we just picked up those half speed racks. We actually allocate each half speed rack for each classroom, labeled it, named it, and it went in the classroom 3 times a week, came back, sanitized, reset, go back, came back, reset, sanitized, go back. And we were able to do that for under $60 per classroom solution, right? On one of those platforms, you can get that. And that was that. And then coming back this year, I think we will still continue to do a classroom model, which allows us to have a little bit more participation since it's in the classroom. Everybody gets served on their desk and everybody gets to enjoy tile stories and within the same group. So less going out and all that stuff. And again, packaging and providing all the components that's necessary to be a compliant are in there. Since this is not an offer versus serve, we are serving, we are including all 5 components in each meal. Each meal has a meat alternative, grain, your vegetable, your fruit, and milk, and everything, all 5 in there, right? So for us to do that, our one model is a 100% classroom delivery model. Our second model is everybody coming and eating at the Harvest Hall. And then there is a third model, which is a hybrid model. So I think just in the coming...
Sorry, listeners, the Harvest Hall, is that your cafeteria space, basically?
Harvest Hall is our dining hall.
Okay.
So we will bring everybody back to either there. And the third model is a hybrid model, where we'll have the upper classes between middle school and a high school to come just walk by a Harvest Hall. Still we will manage everybody with the social distancing or physical distancing protocols and whatever the protocol is still in place. And then for elementary school, everything goes delivered in the classroom. And then our intention is to bring everybody in back in the Harvest Hall in our dining halls. And reason behind it, two things. Number one is the interaction between Harvest Hall to our scholars, means for our opportunity to teach them about food and intentions. Those messages get diluted when we send the food in the classroom. And we understand that the chef's presence in a dining hall and be able to answer their question, be able to talk to them, be able to tell them that hey, we are in it together. I think those messages can be a little bit better when we have the kids back in a Harvest Hall versus sending a food in a classroom. Nowhere in there I'm saying that our academic staff and other partners are doing a not as great job, but I think that the messaging coming right from the source, that loses, it gets diluted in the meantime. So I think our intention to provide the experience of a dining, introducing kids to the cuisine all over the globe, and then every decision that we make, which has a health, wellness, and a nutrition center, those messaging is a little bit better when there's a one-on-one interaction.
Yeah, that's awesome. So to kind of switch it up a little bit and move into talking about some of your ethnic cuisine and world cuisine dishes, what does that look like as you introduce those? First, let's talk about your staff. How have they adapted to maybe, I mean, some of these foods alone may be exceptionally different or unusual or foreign to them. They maybe have never experienced it, maybe never experienced these flavor combinations, or there may be some techniques that they're not familiar with. How have you kind of helped bring them along in this process? And then how are the students receptive to these new flavors?
So great question. And this is a three-part answer to that question. Yeah. So my mantra is training, retraining, and retaining. And I come from that background. You continue to train people, you continue to retrain people, because we as a human being tend to forget things. Yeah. Right? You continue to retrain them, and then you continue to retain the talent where you invested a lot of time, effort, and energy into, right? And for us to develop the staff, number one thing is that the staff need to have a passion for what they're doing. And as I said earlier, I am amazingly blessed to have a staff that just, when they show up to work, they show up to work.
That's awesome.
Every single day. Means my, starting from my lead cook to my admin staff to my chef in house, every single person has a one reason that they show up to work, and that reason is our scholars and our feeding our community. So when you have such a passionate team striving towards a common goal of a health, wellness, and a nutrition, then it's, everything is easy. As a chef, creating those kind of a menu, before I create a menu, I make sure that they understand the principle, standardizing the recipe, standardizing the process, means every single component that we do, it has a four major M's, right? Man, method, machine, and material. Make sure that all those four components are taken care of well. They understand the concept, they understand the intention, they understand the perception, and they understand the execution. And then my gratitude to Team Nutrition, the grant that we received to do the exact same thing, and I'm an ambassador on that, to representing Central Valley and the Central Coast, for us to provide that guidance to other schools to do that. So first part of the answer for your question is that the training, retraining, and retaining.
Yeah.
The second part is how do our kids receive that thing? It's the education, Chef.
I mean,
it's the process. And I think you and I, when we were talking earlier last week, and you hit on something really, really incredible, and I believe in the same thing, that our plan as a chef is not a 1 year or 2 year plan. It's a 12 year plan. We are K to 12. So our plan is a K to 12. We're going to start with the K, introducing either it's arugula or a quinoa. And then in 12 years, we're going to graduate them to try wheat berry, right? So that 12-year process is there, and our intention and education is there. Knowing that we weren't able to see them in person, it has been a little bit challenging, but we know that we will overcome that. Anytime I have an opportunity to do a classes with them, we have done a multiple nutrition classes where I intentionally do the classes of either it's an ethnic cuisine or a cuisine away from their comfort zone. And then I talk about the intention. Even on our website, I talk about one day we did a gyro and a pita and some Greek salad as a lunch. And then we talk about the intention all the time. I mean, it's talking about the herbs that went in a chicken, and talking about the beautiful colors and that went in a Greek salad, and a beautiful feta and olives. Talking of olives, we have 57 trees of olives on our campus.
Oh, wow.
And before I got here, it was the middle of May and June, and all our trees are blooming. And I asked our groundkeeper, what do we do with the olives? So we don't do anything with the olives. We usually don't do anything at all with those. And I said, oh, not under my watch. We are going to figure out a way to do something great with that. And I got hold of a local processor along with our partners, and we were able to capture 3 tons of olives.
Three tons?
Yes.
No way.
Yes, we converted that into 150 liters of cold press olive oil.
Wow.
And that became, if you look at it, we call it branch to bottle project.
Yeah.
Right. And every single component from a branch to bottle, it's an education. Either it's an ag lesson or a business lesson or a marketing lesson or just business in general. I mean, yeah, you talk about the nutrition through that thing, and imagine nutrition is not the only thing. And let me show you something. And I know that this is a podcast and our listeners won't be able to see it, but this is the exact bottle of olive oil. And it says a wonderful College Prep Academy on a label. And we were able to do multiple bottles like this, and where we actually got an incubator grant this year that's going to help us harvest. Actually, last year we were able to do only 3 tons. This year we will be able to do 6+ tons of olives, and then it's double of a capacity. We would be able to use it in our teaching kitchen environment, create some lesson plans, either it's the ag lesson or the business lesson or the marketing lessons or anything in between. Means branch to bottle and everything in between is just a practical and a lesson for our students. So those are the things that every single time we do. So I know that I took a lot longer to answer your question, but that's exactly the question. That's exactly the answer. And there is a lot of process and layers involved.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I'm sitting here just awestruck and mind blown. I can't imagine how some of our listeners are feeling right now. That bottle he showed, Chef, that looks better than most of the bottles you see on the grocery store shelves. The marketing piece that you put behind that, and then the education to show the students, here's a product that was just going to waste. And now we're finding a way to reclaim that and utilize it in our meal preparation, utilize it in other ways. I mean, I'm so inspired right now. I'm going to go start shaking trees to find something I can harvest and educate people with. I mean, that is just, that's incredible. Wow. So in terms of getting students to just try new foods, I mean, I know you're saying education, but are there strategies on how you're educating them on, or plans you have on once you can get more of that, face-to-face sort of component on, you know, are you working with teachers to deliver that? Is it happening, in a concert with a nutrition class or some sort of other educational class? Are you posters in the cafeteria? Like, how are you reaching the students? I mean, I think a lot of our listeners know they need to educate and they want to educate, but they don't know how to bridge that gap.
Great question, Chef. And then the answer is all of the above, right? I mean, it can't be a one or another. It needs to be every single layer that involves the transition. So from educating our academic staff and telling them the intention to creating some nutrition classes and then doing demos and doing a live feed. I mean, not long ago, we did a tasting for So fusion of, let's put it this way, that the best way to have any cuisine introduced to you, use the ingredients that you are familiar with, and then they use the technique that calls for that cuisine. And I'll give you a great example as a hummus, right? Every single Latin Hispanic family understand what the black beans are.
Right.
Hummus calls for garbanzo beans. Beans. Remember, hummus is you have a beans, you have a tahini, and you have some lemon, a little bit of herbs, and a salt and pepper, and then you blitz everything together. Right. If someone understands what black beans are, and you create that hummus with some chipotle in it, that segues into taking them to a hummus that's made with the garbanzo beans and a tahini. Right. So what we did, we introduced them, we had them taste the black bean hummus, and then we had them taste the authentic hummus. So segue is a lot easy. So the nutrition level, then the class level, then education level, then using the familiar ingredients to segue into the authentic cuisine, that's another thing. And also we're in the middle of a salad bowl, as I was telling, that I try to stick with all the ingredients that my staff and my students are familiar and create a flavor based on things that are familiar. I give you a great example of for a team nutrition, our school is doing a California Bowl. Right, that California Bowl will have all the curry, then it will have a curry spice quinoa and a brown rice and some curry that's made with the coconut milk, and then we have a cucumber salad. So the cucumber salad, again, instead of making it complicated, very authentic Indian meals, my intention is to have them an introduction to what Indian food tastes like and then go from there. Instead of going just 180 of what people are familiar with, just give them a segue. So in the salad, we are doing a cucumber, tomatoes, onion, and cilantro with some lime juice and salt and pepper, all the ingredients kids are familiar with.
Right.
And then in the curry, I'm doing tofu, butternut squash, zucchini, onion, and pepper. All the ingredients my kids are familiar with. Then in the brown rice is a common thing where we use all the time. Quinoa is another thing we use all the time. And then let's do it in a masala setting and then create a bowl out of that thing and have them taste that. Is everybody going to like that? Remember, Chef, this is a 12-year process. This is not a 12-year process. So you are going to have some student who are hard set, who are going to say, I absolutely hate it. And that's absolutely fine. That's absolutely okay. At least you did your due diligence. You introduced them to something and get them ready for the global cuisine, get them ready for them when they go out and become a global citizens, right? And then kids who are just starting right now, they get to introduce to us something entirely different. We create a whole event out of that thing. Right before Cinco de Mayo, we did a taco tasting where we did a shiitake mushroom, some tortilla shells, and then a cashew crema, all that vegan taco. And we had a big old display outside of our dining hall. We did a nice big paella pan, some burners, some griddles, and created a music out of that thing. And the kids came in and grabbed the taco. And we did not tell anybody what was the meat in there, because there wasn't any.
Right.
Right. So my one thing is that and all our listeners and you are familiar with the Edgy Veggie project that came out of Stanford University. And when we started that project, dining hall, and I worked in the Stanford dining at that point, we were directly involved in creating a different nomenclature. So instead of using the vegetarian and vegans in the thing, it actually just pushes the people away from trying that thing. Call it something absolutely authentic and absolutely mind-blowing, and then people don't even pay mind to what ingredient that thing has. And right. And for that, for people to try that thing and they say, wow, this is incredible, they keep coming back for a second and third. And then at the end, we told them, hey, by the way, this whole thing was vegan, has no meat whatsoever, and nobody missed it. Nobody really missed it. And now that thing is going to be, the shiitake mushroom tacos are going to be our one of our staples in our menu.
That's awesome.
So long short answer to your thing is it's just keep pushing, keep trying, training, retraining, and retaining, either it's for your student or for your staff. That's the philosophy, that's the strategy.
Yeah. Wow, Chef, I am, like I said, I am so inspired and awestruck with all you are doing. Just 15 months in the job, right? Is that right? Man, you are well on your way, sir.
13 months to be precise, 15, 16 months for a COVID. But this, I, as a chef, this is, I mean, I was talking to a group of our directors not long ago, and one of the director brought that the school nutrition chef does not get attention and a focus and as everybody else in the industry. Yeah. And then my question to that chef was, as a chef, do you sleep well in the night? He goes, yes. And I said, well, that's the accomplishment itself. 22 years in the industry, this is the first time when I go home and I sleep very well. I feel I am one step closer to my purpose as a chef, as a human being, to be able to be a part of a solution. And what better way to tackle food insecurity right by its horn, right in the middle of most food desert in California, which is a Central Valley, be able to be a vehicle, be able to be a person who is a part of a solution. And I really don't care for the fame, show, or the money. I had a plenty of opportunities to get those in 22 years. This is my time to get closer to a purpose. And I sleep very well. And I hope every single listener of ours the same. And this has been humbling.
I'm humbled. I'm humbled by your story. I'm humbled by your journey. I hope others are too. And we need to get more chefs in our field, right? Helping or just culinarians, people who understand food, people who can train the people who are preparing food for our children on how to do it the right way, make it appealing, make it appetizing, make it a growth and educational experience. And, you know, we're helping children on their food journey. And you shouldn't be 35 when you finally taste arugula and go, oh, it's not too bad. You know, there's so many great things out there. And Chef, the work you and your team are doing is outstanding. We are going to be staying in close contact. So for all of you out there, thank you so much for joining us today. Chef, I can't thank you enough for joining us. This is Chef Patrick. We're going to sign off for now. And we'll catch back up with you next month on another episode of The Mix Up. Thank you, Chef.
Thank you so much, Chef. I truly appreciate the opportunity.
Really. Absolutely. Thank you for joining us.
Join us next time as we continue to mix it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community. I've been your host, Chef Patrick Garmong from the Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition. Hey, don't forget to wash your hands.
This project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Nutrition Service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitney Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-509-4410, or call 202-720-5964. USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.